Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to History Rage, the podcast for angry historians. And welcome to another of our live specials coming to you from the Gloucester History Festival in the beautiful setting of Blackfriars Priory. And today, debunking the local legends this time round, we are joined by the co-authors of Gloucester Recreating the Past, which is on re-release for this very festival. I would like to welcome historian Phil Moss and archaeologist Andrew Armstrong. Guys, welcome to History Rage.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So before we dive into what's pissing you off today, then, just give me, because I've never met you before. It's a pleasure to do so. But if you can give us an insight into your backgrounds, your careers, you know, how you came to write this book, and then we can get into Gloucester itself.
Okay. Well, my background is basically I trained as originally a technical illustrator. This then branched out from engineering side of things to architecture. My hobby was archaeology. And I found myself giving lots of talks on local history, and I suddenly thought, well, that would be nice to show a picture of that building as it was, or that archaeological site as it was. And so I gradually, over time, built up a collection just for my own personal use, basically, in my talks. But then when Andrew came, we met Andrew, and we got chatting, and I thought, oh, I wonder if Andrew might like to have some of these facts for his talks. So, and it's just sort of grown from there, to be honest with you.
Lovely. And Andrew?
Yes, well, I'm the city archaeologist at Gloucester City Council, and I started out as an archaeologist a long time ago now, about 2000. I became a field archaeologist, and I spent many years digging stuff up all over Britain, and then eventually, after many different career changes, I got the great privilege of being the city archaeologist here in Gloucester. And one day we were excavating the new bus station, which is now very shiny and beautiful, but we were excavating the foundations for the bus station. And we found a Roman building underneath the bus station, and it was represented to me that it would be wonderful to have some form of interpretation about what had been found there, so the general public could see it. So I got in touch with Phil, and he produced this rather beautiful drawing showing this Roman building as we think it would have looked, with Roman Gloucester extending out behind it. And it was brilliant. I said, Phil, this is wonderful. What a great artist you are. He said, oh, well, I'll send you over some of my other artwork, Andrew. And what he kind of dropboxed over to me was 40 separate images of historic reconstructions of Gloucester.
Yeah.
And I looked at them and I thought, my goodness, this is remarkable. It's such a beautiful collection. And it tells the story of the city from the Roman period right through to the Civil War. And I thought, well, it's absolutely nuts that I'm the only person who can see this, or me and Phil are the only people who can see this. And I mentioned casually to Phil that it would make a wonderful book, that telling the story of the city's history in a way that was really accessible to people.
Yeah.
And Phil said, I've written books before, we could do that. I was slightly joking. But he said, we could do that, I know people, and the rest is history. We wrote the book, it was very kindly adopted by the History Festival Trust. All the proceeds go to the History Festival Trust, yes, the office proceeds. Mm-hmm. And I'm delighted with how beautiful it looks and how popular it seems to have been.
Yeah, I've been having a look through it in between talks today, and it's really stunning work. So, and stunning work for even finding the buildings in the first place so that Phil can draw them.
Yes.
So History Rage is about that one thing then that's been eating away at your soul for, you know, the past 20, 30 years. So we ask all of our guests this same question. And what is the one historical thing you wish everyone would just stop believing?
Well, my bugbear is the secret passages underneath the city. This has been going on for years, and people talk about the secret tunnels that all of them, or most of them, lead from somewhere to the cathedral.
Right.
And the whole point is this: if you actually, I did draw a map once and plotted all the ones I've been told about. And basically, the whole of Gloucester is totally hollow underneath. It's quite simply is that dreadful. I mean, some of them are unbelievable. Like we're here at Blackfriars, and then I was told there's a secret tunnel here from Blackfriars down to Lansany Priory, which I suppose half a mile away, I suppose, is it from here?
And almost certainly underwater by the time.
But absolutely. I mean, it's well below the water table, so you'd have to be able to swim a long way underwater if you wanted to go along that one. And the one that was most hilarious was they said, oh, there's a secret passage that goes from the Fountain Inn to Painswick Beacon, which is about 5 miles away.
Oh, great.
And it not only was it a secret passage, it was big enough to ride a horse along. You tell people it's not true. I can understand where the myth comes from, in as much because virtually every building in Gloucester had or mostly have cellars. Mm. And a lot of these have been filled in, but then we've got some amazing 13th century vaulted undercrofts in Gloucester. And obviously people think, well, this looks an old-fashioned old tunnel. Also, they used to have, when they had access to the street, there used to be the barrel ramps that you drop coming in from the pavement. Now, and in some places, they've been bricked up. And I remember I was in one building, said, look, he said, come and have a look at my cellar. He said, there, he said, that's the blocked-up doorway to the secret passage to the cathedral.
How much did you enjoy breaking his heart?
Well, the trouble is, they don't believe you. I mean, the fact is, you can say almost proved 100%, there are no secret passages. They just don't believe you, so they just carries on. It's incredible.
What would have been the point of these secret tunnels?
Well, they used to say that there was a secret tunnel from the cathedral to the Fleece Inn. Now, the Fleece was supposedly owned by the Abbey, and they said they have to have this secret tunnel so the monks could nip out for a pint, you see.
Right.
But the snag was, in those days, the Benedictine order, I mean, they had a gallon of ale a day each anyway. So they didn't need to nip out for a pint.
It's quite an engineering project to deal with. Nobody will mind if the monks go for a beer. So they're brewing the stuff.
I just don't know how you can dig a tunnel in secret. Because, I mean, what do you do with all the spoil?
Well, the greatest shame, isn't it?
I can just see council workers getting rid of all that rubbish.
No, the trousers, you see, the other one is from the prison. When I first got here, people kept telling me, because we have the former prison site in Gloucester is looking at being redeveloped, and lots of people are interested, and people will tell you, gospel truth, they will say, there's a tunnel from the prison to the courts at Shire Hole.
Yeah.
And I'd heard this a few times. Someone's cousin had seen it. Someone's colleague's friend had seen it.
Yeah.
Someone had been a prison guard who had been a friend of a prison guard who'd seen it.
Yeah.
I said, all right. People keep saying this, but I can't meet anyone who's actually seen the tunnel.
Yeah.
And then one day I got an actual report saying, you know, by a professional person saying, there's a tunnel from the prison to the courts.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, well, can we come and see it then?
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, I got a very shamefaced little email just saying, turns out there isn't a tunnel.
The prison is not a place you want a tunnel coming from.
I would have thought not.
No.
I mean, it seems like a flaw.
Yeah, I mean, there are photographs from the old prison, the old horse-drawn Marias. The fact is, when they were taking the prisoners to court, I mean, they transported them in a horse-drawn carriage. So, there you go.
So I mean, first of all, then we've talked there about the mythical tunnels and the network. Mm. Are there any actual genuine ones?
No. There is, what about the Hamlet Cafe Rennie? There's a short tunnel there, isn't there?
Yeah, but that's not... No, I've been along all the cellars under there and I can't... There's nothing really old at all, to be truthful.
Not, fine. Nothing. Can we edit my comment out? Do that again.
Nothing. I must admit, I didn't see anything when I went down there that looked old. But yeah. There we are.
Well, before I dive in, just trying to break up the conversation a bit before we dive into other Gloucester myths and things like that. I would just like to share, if I may, a kind of personal bugbear of mine and get your opinions on it. And that is, if I could get my own rage out here, that I am getting really sick and tired of like local history being kind of treated as second rate and amateur. And you only have to look at, you know, if I introduce myself as like a local historian, you get that look that's almost, I'm sorry you're not good enough to be a proper historian, Bob. You
know, you're absolutely right.
God's sake, you know, local history is history.
I agree completely. Local history is also so often where national history happens. You know, if you look at Gloucester, we've got links to the Domesday Book. You know, it's local history that the Domesday Book was commissioned in Gloucester and then it became national history. We have links to Richard III coming here. We have Henry II.
Well, kings of England. We had Henry III was crowned here in Gloucester. I mean, it's the only coronation since the Norman conquest outside Westminster. So crowned here. We've got King Edward II. He's buried here in our cathedral. And also, like with the national events, you can actually see the results of the national events. Because I always remember at school, I always loved history at school. It's great. Mm-hmm. And the point being, I loved history until it got up to the political bit, you know, and it got a bit boring. You know, history becomes the pits, you know, pit the elder, pit the younger. And then we ended up with the repeal of the Corn Laws. I mean, how boring is that? But when I was at school, I didn't realise until long after I left school, all the warehouses in Gloucester Docks were built as a result of the repeal of the Corn Laws because of the free import-export of corn. And I mean, suddenly think there was a national event reflected here. And then I say we've had things happen in Gloucester, which became national. So, yeah, I think local history is great. I mean, they always say about if you don't have a history, as far as you're concerned, if you don't have a history, you remain a child. You don't grow up. You have no history. So I think local history is really important.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. I mean, one of the speakers we're seeing at the History Festival later is talking about the Siege of Gloucester, which is a remarkable local event during the English Civil War. And it's tied to lots of local issues, things like religion, like Puritanism is quite popular in Gloucester. It's tied to, bizarrely, tobacco farms out in the Cotswolds. Yeah. It's tied to a host of local issues, about which really motivated people.
That's right.
So local's really important, even on the national stage. People pick their side in the English Civil War because of local issues.
That's right. Very local issues. I was remembering, just to say one incident about the Civil War, there are two hamlets near Stroud. Two small hamlets, very close together. And when the Queen's Silver Jubilee was in 1977, somebody asked one of the elderly ladies in this one hand, they said, well, why are you running two separate events? Said, why don't you get together and have one big event? And the old lady said, well, we can't do that. He said, they were for Parliament and we were for the King.
That's 300 years later.
And they were still simmering away.
Well, thank you very much for that, guys. So then, the next big one that you really want to approach here, and the festival curator, Sarah Smythe, is quite nervous about this one because she's been using it to champion Gloucester. Mm. Lady Jane Grey.
Yeah.
Lady Jane Grey. So tell us about that particular myth and tell us why it's bollocks.
Absolutely. Well, basically, is that Lady Jane Grey was proclaimed queen here at Gloucester. She was supposed to be here and it was all done from the balcony of the new inn and one thing
it's
and another.
Dramatic.
And I thought, oh, great, fantastic. When you actually look into it properly, first of all, she never came to Gloucester. She never got within 30 miles of Gloucester. Yeah. But when you look into the Chamberlain's accounts for that time, the proclamation did come from London and it went to literally not only Gloucester, every town and city in the country had a copy. And it was a printed document of several pages long, you know, really long, boring.
took 9 days to read it.
Absolutely, you know? Well, yeah, you probably wouldn't have finished it really if it was you got your head chopped off. But basically, in the Chamberlain's accounts, somebody just misread it. And actually, the herald or the person that brought the proclamation from London stayed at the New Inn. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's it.
Actually, the way it reads, I must admit, I can understand the confusion because there was no punctuation or anything in this. It just said, the man who brought the proclamation for the Queen's Grace, who is now at the New Inn. You see?
I see where that's going.
That's it. And of course, then he said, well, this queen, if she had come, I mean, it had cost the local council absolutely hundreds and hundreds of pounds because royalty doesn't come alone. They come with a whole entourage.
Yeah. And they charge you as well. They don't pay their own way, do they?
That's right. Well, again, this cost the council 10 shillings. So I don't think the queen came with it. But there again, there's a plaque. There's a plaque on the front of the inn at the moment. It was put up when it was taken over by Bernie Innes, but they put it up there. But again, you can tell people it's not true, but they don't want to believe it. So there we go.
Yeah, that is half the historian's battle, actually, is to get people to, particularly if you're going to completely turn around an established narrative, because we have Ian Mortimer talking about Edward II early on, and he's very much making the case of, that was, that murder there didn't happen.
Yeah.
It didn't happen there at that time. And he's had a right old fight on his hands regarding that one. So that basically is it with regards to Lady Jane Grey. There isn't actually any supporting evidence to suggest anything that involved her at all.
None whatsoever.
Sarah will cry.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, then. So this is going to nicely sort of tie me into to the local museum. But one of the others that you mentioned that to me then is Bishop John Hooper. Now, this was a completely new one on me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a Gloucesterman. I'm a Yorkshireman.
Mm.
I very rarely come to the south of England apart from when I'm invited to a history festival. And that's really it. So can you tell me, first of all, about Bishop John Hooper and then the kind of legend that's grown up around that?
Yeah, well, John Hooper, he was second Bishop of Gloucester, and he had the unfortunate fate that he was actually burnt to death in Gloucester on February the 9th, 1555. He came the second Bishop of Gloucester. He was offered, but he was offered the bishopric of Gloucester, the See of Gloucester. He initially said no, because he was very much a very dour Protestant type person. And he didn't dislike the fine trapping, the robes and all ceremony.
Yeah.
So they consequently put him in prison for a couple of weeks to reconsider it. So he did. Anyway, eventually, because he was a very strong Protestant, and cut this very short, when Mary came to the throne and the reintroduction of Catholicism, he was not having anything to do with that, the truck. And basically, he was accused of a trumped up charge of debt, of the misappropriation of the funds of the See of Gloucester. And so he was basically tried, condemned to death. And in those days, your death would take place at the scene of the crime. So he was then brought back to Gloucester. He said to have stayed in the house of Richard Ingram. And it was there for a couple of nights, and then he was executed in St. Mary's Square, just round the corner from the cathedral. And the point being is they always mistook the building. Now, we've got the one thing that was always known as the what was the Folk Museum was Bishop Hooper's house, but he never stayed there. It was further up the street in what was the Booth Hall. There was a Booth Hall, which was the main council chamber and inn, and there was a bit of a lock-up there as well. So he was housed there.
Yeah.
But not down in the one building which people still call Bishop Hooper's lodgings. I can say he may, as Bishop, the guy that owned the building at the time, they would have known each other, and it's possible the bishop might have popped in for a quick meal or something. I don't know. But,
basically, not enough to warrant the sitting troughs of having a blue blackout.
Well, absolutely. So, I mean, he had nothing to do with the building at all.
So how do these, you're fighting these myths, how do these myths kind of take root? And like you say, half your battle is trying to get people that they absolutely refuse to believe.
Yeah, I think it's basically, is that if somebody says it, and then somebody else repeats it. And if it's repeated often enough and long enough, it gets into sort of become an accepted fact. And then,
especially if it gets written down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then spoken by a tour guide.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, I mean, I've written stuff in the past, and you quoted what you thought was a wonderfully acceptable source of wonderful. And then after a little while, you suddenly thought, hang on, there's something not quite right here. And when you delve into it, you find the thing isn't true at all. But it's very difficult.
Very difficult to come back from. I've done it as well. And like you say, once it's on a blue plaque or similar, it's enters the public consciousness, and it's very hard to do anything about.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so sticking with the theme of the Gloucester history then, like you say, I believe, Andrew, you said it's glocal, I think it is. Hmm. That is global and local, is Gloucester, and it is this microcosm of the history of the world.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the most significant events, figures, developments in Gloucester's history that aren't actually as widely known or as appreciated by the public as you think they should be?
Well, I mean, there are loads. I mean, firstly, Gloucester itself was founded as a Roman colonial settlement in the early 1st century AD. And it's founded using citizens from all over the Roman world, and it's founded to cement Roman power in the southwest of England, in the province of Britain. And that is part of a interlinked global empire that is imposed on the landscape. It's not locally made, Gloucester. It's created by an external empire, and that's absolutely fascinating. Mm. Bath to the south is a local religious site probably before the Romans arrive, and they just develop it. Corinium is a Cirencester, I should say, is probably developed by the local Britons as their capital. But Gloucester is a Roman creation, and then it becomes local over time. And I think that's one of only three colonia in Britain at the start. They build them, the Romans, where they're worried. They build them where they want lots of retired soldiers to live, just to keep an eye on things. Yeah. Mm. And I think that's a lovely and important demonstration of imperial power and how it works. You don't think of it when you come to Gloucester these days. Gloucester's immensely English and
cathedral
local.
And medieval. And,
yeah. You don't think imperial plantation town, do you?
No, that's fascinating.
I
love that.
Yeah, I think too, a significant, I mean, it is affected by national events like we've been talking this morning. We did a thing about the Siege of Gloucester. Longest story, complicated, but basically people often say that the Siege of Gloucester was the beginning of the downfall of Charles I, because Gloucester was the only sort of fortified garrison sort of between the West Country and the North. And had Gloucester fallen, then the king, most of the west of the country was in royalist hands, but it was tying in lots of troops in Wales. Also, there were lots of other troops, his troops around Gloucester. So he couldn't then go and conquer the east side of the country. And so consequently, Gloucester, it's a little siege, and they lasted out. And
how long was the siege?
Well, the actual siege was about 30 days.
Yeah.
But before, I mean, The storm clouds were gathering. The king had been surrounding. I mean, a year before that, it was on the cards. It was going to happen. But I mean, that, as they say, that began the chain of events. Eventually, you know, had he taken Gloucester, he could have suddenly freed up the whole of the west of England, moved all the troops into the other side, and then
marched on London.
Yeah. I mean, that was the prize, because it was in Parliament's hands. So I mean, but he
And Parliament was so worried about that, that they actually closed the shops, didn't they? So the apprentices in London could join up.
The relief force came from London to relieve Gloucester. I mean, it was
quite significant worry.
Yeah. It's a big deal, very big deal.
Absolutely.
And the victory of Parliament in Gloucester may have changed the course of the English Civil War.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that important.
Yeah.
I thought of another one, Phil, that people don't know enough about.
Go for it.
Which is... Gloucester is actually the capital or the royal centre of Æthelflæd, who's the daughter of Alfred the Great. And Æthelflæd oversees the reconquest of the Midlands against the Danes, the Vikings, if you like. She is, in effect, in charge of the English kingdom of Mercia, or what that part of Mercia that is still under English control. And because so much of the rest of Mercia, that's the Midlands really to us today, has fallen to the Danes, Gloucester becomes the new de facto capital. Mm. And what Æthelflæd does here is she fortifies the city, she builds churches, and she rallies the Mercians to fight back against the Danes and ultimately retakes the whole of the Midlands while her brother is retaking East Anglia. Her brother is the King of Wessex. So Gloucester is the springboard, if you like, from which the English retake England. Mm. And that's huge.
That's huge.
Mm.
Absolutely huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like that phrase. Local.
Yeah, it's local.
That's right. Good. Yeah.
So to wrap us up then, in your view, what are the most important primary sources or historical records that provide insight into Gloucester's history, and how accessible are these to researchers and the public?
My initial suggestion would be to get a grip on Gloucester's history is the Victoria County History. They produced the Gloucester volume a few years ago. That's a great place to start. And also it's free online as well. If you go in and go to Victoria County History and Gloucester volume, I mean, it's a great place to start because that will answer an awful lot of questions. Not totally, but it's a brilliant way to start and it's available. So, and there've been loads of other books, various on smaller things, but some of the archaeology's publications are brilliant. To get the early one, when Andrew would know more about that. But the fact is, that would be a good place to start. But then there's all sorts of other books available. Yeah,
I mean, I come at this from such a different angle to Phil because I'm solely an archaeologist, yeah, not a historian.
See, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, go out there and dig it up.
Kind of, yes. I mean, because I have a very strange job. I'm what is called a curatorial archaeologist. So my job is to look after Gloucester, because Gloucester is a beautiful city. It's a great place to live, but it's also a massive and complicated archaeological site. Mm. And the story of Gloucester, the legacy of the people of Gloucester, and if you like, our chance of better understanding it is all out there, underground and within the standing buildings that surround us. You're something like 4.5 to 5 meters above the natural geology if you stand in the center of Gloucester. Below you are just layers and layers of history. And for me, those are the most important undiscovered resource for the history of the city. And it's my huge privilege to be responsible for trying to look after them, which is at times quite daunting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, thank you very much for that, gentlemen. If you want to just round off as a historian and archaeologist, we're both very passionate about Gloucester. Mm. If you'd just like to round off with, you know, how people can learn more about Gloucester and why they should be coming to the Gloucester History Festival in autumn.
Well, they should be coming to the Gloucester History Festival in autumn because it's fascinating, full of a huge variety of different speakers. It's a really varied history festival. Local history, which we all agree is hugely important, national and international history, and even some archaeology. It's absolutely the best history festival I've been to. And why should people come to Gloucester? Well, it's just a remarkable place. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely it's like England in microcosm. What happens in Gloucester reflects the history of the whole country. It's a most remarkable, vibrant, beautiful and interesting city, and it's well worth a drop in.
Absolutely, I've got to totally agree with you, Andrew. Yeah, I mean, more about the city, drop into the Museum of Gloucester. I mean, that's a great place to start because you've got a lot of work there. There's also quite a number of local books now available in the local bookshops on various subjects. So of course, what we have here, we've got the docks, we're sort of the most inland sea connected port in the country, and that's a wonderful place to go around and walk around the docks, and there are lots of publications on the waterways and what have you. It's all available here. There's a great many sort of, let's just say, books like that, pamphlets, maps, guides, what have you. Come and find out.
Well, thank you very much. And if you would like to know more about Phil, Andrew, or Gloucester, then you should and can get a copy of Gloucester's History, Recreating the Past. You can certainly follow Andrew on Twitter at AndrewRPGLevon.
RPG Gleavum.
And I'm sure you'll get a lot more Gloucester history coming through from that feed as well. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. That wraps us up for the Gloucester History Festival live this year. We have one more festival special coming for you with Nandini Das that we are recording remotely. But if you've not managed to make it this year, then the festival returns in autumn. Those dates are the 14th of September to the 22nd of September, 2024. You can sign up to the festival mailing list at gloucesterhistoryfestival.co.uk, and you can follow them on Twitter at GloucesterHistFest. And if you've enjoyed this podcast and you would like to support us, you can follow us on Twitter at History Rage, or you can subscribe to us on Patreon. For your cherished £5 per month, we will give you early access to episodes, entry into all of our prize draws, the invite to put questions to future guests, and of course, the coveted History Rage mug. And you can subscribe at patreon.com/History Rage. But until then, from all of us at the Gloucester History Festival, stay angry. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow-up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.